Hi, I'm Ashley Manatic. Can you help me reopen this with a serenity prayer? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, courage to change the things that can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I am nervous. Thanks, Sush, for pointing that out. My clean date is October 14th, 2002. It was funny because actually somebody sent me a Facebook message asking if I was the Ashley V that spoke a couple of years ago at this retreat. And I was like, maybe. No, I said yes. And, you know, and then I guess somehow passed my number around and they called to ask me to speak. And, you know, it's just crazy because I never thought I would be here. I never had any plans on getting here and staying here. I never thought that I would be standing in front of people telling my story. You know, I'll talk about a little bit about where, you know, I came from, but in case you didn't pick up on it, I'm kind of young, so there's not a whole lot of using that happened, you know. The long and the short of it is basically I started shooting dope when I was 12, and I got clean 4 days before my 16th birthday. And I'm 25 now. So I'm from Pittsburgh, and I'm from a suburb outside of Pittsburgh. It's called Bethel Park. My family was a disaster. And I thought, you know, I thought I was so unique in that aspect. Like, nobody else could possibly relate to what that felt like. And then when I came to NA, I realized everybody's family's a disaster. So I fit right in. And, you know, I remember, you know, in early age, you know, my parents fought a lot. They were getting, you know, they ended up getting a divorce. My dad ended up dying of a cocaine overdose in front of me while I was on the phone with 911 when I was 7 years old. And I didn't know then, but at the time, like, you know, I just took it. It was, like, personal. It was, like, I felt like he did it to me. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like he left me. And I didn't really understand the disease of addiction or anything like that, but I knew that drugs were involved. And my mom had been an alcoholic, and, after he, passed away, she just went totally off the deep end. And, so when I was 9, I came home from kindergarten, or not kindergarten, elementary school. My dad died when I was in kindergarten, and I don't know, maybe like, I don't know, second or third grade, and I walked up to my house, and my mom opened the door, and she told me that I didn't live there anymore, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what was going on. What had happened was my sister had taken custody of me and my brother in a court case, and because my mom couldn't take care of us, and she didn't want to take care of us anymore. And at the time, like I said, I didn't understand the disease of addiction. I just thought, once again, it was me. It was personal. She didn't want me. And so I didn't really get that whole unconditional love thing. You know, I've been blessed to have my sister in my life. If I grow up to be half the woman that she is, because I'm 25. She took custody of me and my brother when she was 21. If I'm half of who she is, I'll be a happy person. But I hated my parents. I absolutely hated them. You know, in the last, like, 2 years after my dad died, I lived with my mom. Our house kind of turned into, like, a crack house. There was just people coming in and out. You know, my mom wouldn't pay the electric bill. She didn't pay the gas bill one winter. We all, like, we had to sleep, like, in the living room with the fireplace. And I just, you know, when I moved in with my sister, I hated my parents. I hated everything about them. And I didn't want to use because I knew that had played a part. Like, I didn't want to have anything to do with drugs or alcohol. And so I became, like, really active in, like, Just Say No and Students for Safe Schools Council. And I would go around and do these, like, little plays to tell kids to say no to drugs. And one of the first things like I ever related to when I came to a meeting was when people talked about not feeling like they fit in anywhere, you know, and that's how I constantly felt, like in school, no matter what, I felt like I just didn't belong, I just didn't fit in, and I hated being in my own skin, you know, just that constant, like, I just hated being me, and I don't even know, obviously I was 12, my brother is older than me, and I started hanging out with him and his friends, and I started talking to one of his guy friends, and basically, you know, he told me he thought I was cute, and I thought I was in love, because it doesn't take much to swoon me off my feet, and so I started, you know, talking to this kid, and, you know, they had already been through the whole, like, smoking weed, just drinking, having fun phase, and through the pill phase. They were already through all of that, you know, and they were into the shooting dope phase. And I just wanted to fit in so bad. And I remember at first, when I found out he was doing it, like, I gave that ultimatum. I was like, well, it's me or the drugs. And he said the drugs. And I was like, I'm just kidding. Like, I was just seeing what you're going to say. You know, so I decided that whole, like, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's what I did, because that just desperate, like, I want to be a part of. You know, I just want to fit in. Like, you can't leave me. I'm not losing out again to these fucking drugs. Excuse my language. Like, I'm not doing it. You know, just in my heart, that desperation to just want to be, you know, feel some type of love from somewhere. And so I was off and running, you know, basically. I started shooting dope with him. I moved out when I was 13. We got this, like, apartment. I thought I was doing big, big things in our, like, one-bedroom apartment with one piece of furniture. We shared with, like, multiple little insects, and I just, you know, it was never, it, like, literally, for me, I was blessed in the fact that it was never fun. It was, like, it went from being, the first time I used, first of all, I got sick. It was the worst night of my life. Like, I thought I was going to die, and then, you know, and I tried to act like I wasn't going to die, and then I remember, he called me the next day, and he was like, so you want to do it again? And I was like, absolutely, let's go. And that's kind of been the theme of my life. Like, I do something that's not a good idea, and then I do it again and again and again and again. And it just went into that, you know, I just hated me. I hated everything about me. I hated who I was becoming. You know, like, I thought at some point, you know, that I was going to do so many things, you know, and I was going to be nothing like my parents. And, I was turning exactly into them, you know, exactly like them. You know, I burnt every bridge. You know, my family didn't want to have anything to do with me. My sister, you know, couldn't even look at me. You know, she couldn't even talk to me. And I started going in and out of treatment facilities because I liked them. Like, I thought they were like little vacations. And probably my last year of using, like, you know, from, like, 15 to 16, like, I spent more time in some type of facility than I did outside of the facility. And a lot of people didn't want to buy it. Like, a lot, you know, I know a lot of people told my sister that, you know, she's too young. She has, like, the big thing was I had an eating disorder. I wasn't an addict. I just had an eating disorder, which if anybody knows me knows, like, I'm pretty much a fat kid. And I have no problem eating. So, you know, and that's what she dealt with. She would try to get me help, and then she would have professionals telling her that I wasn't an addict, that I just need therapy and everything else. And I went with it. Oh, I ran with it. I was like, absolutely, you're right. I hate eating. And the last time that I went to rehab, I didn't even want to go to rehab. I just didn't know what else to do. I had just gotten out of the hospital. I'd been in the hospital for 4 days because my boyfriend, the love of my life, had beat me up because he thought I sold the dirt bike to the dope man. And I didn't, and I wish I would have because it was a great idea. But it wasn't my idea, and I didn't do it. Anyway, so he was convinced that I did do it, and we got into this altercation, and he punched me, and I fell down the flight of stairs. I was in the hospital for 4 days. And when I came out of the hospital, I went back to our apartment, and I just couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't do it. And I didn't know what I couldn't do. I wasn't at that point where I believed it was drugs and alcohol. But I just thought, like, I'm 16. And if I die today, I'd rather die right now, today, right in this moment, than live to be 70 years old. You know, I don't want to have anything to do with that. Like, I can't do this. I can't do this for another 60 years. Like, I can't. And just that, like, feeling of, like, I really felt like it was never going to get any better. And like I said, I didn't know what else to do, so I went to rehab. And I had no intentions of going to rehab, because I would go into rehab and I would come up with plans about all the things I was going to do when I got out of rehab. And I was, you know, I'd go in, I'd be like, okay, I just need to go to detox. And I'd go to detox and I'd be like, okay, I'll go to detox and inpatient for like 3 days, and then I'm going to get out and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And it never worked out that way, ever. Like, I always got out and got high, and then it's like all my plans just fell away. And so this time I went in, and once again I went in, and I was like, I'm just going to go for 5 days. That's it. I'm going for 5 days, and I'm out of here. And I know sometimes that a power greater than myself comes into my life. And sometimes I don't even ask for it. Because I don't know how I ended up staying there longer. I know that my sister came up and said, there's absolutely no way you're coming home. But that hadn't stopped me before. And I don't know what it was. I went with it. She said she wanted me to go to this halfway house up in Canton, Pennsylvania. And so I went. And I hated every day of it. I can tell you I'm coming up on 10 years clean, and I still hate every day that I spent in that halfway house. It might be why I'm coming up on 10 years clean, because it was like hell. But, I went there. And once again, you know, I had big plans. I was only going to stay for this amount of time, and then I ended up staying for like 18 months. Actually, my third day there, I tried to run away. It was like in the middle of nowhere. Okay, it's like up past Williamsport, almost to like the Pennsylvania-New York border. We were next to like a huge-ass cow farm. It was, by this point, it was like mid-November, and I decided that I was out. I was going. And so I run. I get out. I'm running. Okay, now I'm scared because it's pitch black. There's no street lights or anything. It is pitch black. I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm scared to death. And so I just start running full speed, thinking I'll eventually get somewhere. I'm running and I'm running and I'm running, and I hit this and it feels like a brick wall. Like, I feel my nose, like I just feel blood coming out everywhere. It was a cow. I ran in to a cow, and I laid, and I was laying in this field, and I just thought, like, is this my life right now? Like, is this what's happening? And I turned around and started walking back towards the halfway house, and I'll never forget, because the door's like locked on the outside, like banging on the door. And she was like, the lady opened, and she's like, what happened to you? And I was like, I ran into a cow. Like, and I stayed, you know, so I don't, maybe that cow saved my life, I don't know. But needless to say, I don't get along with livestock very well. And after I decided to stay, after that moment, and I realized that I wasn't going anywhere. And the other thing that made me realize that, besides running into the whole cow part, was just running in that dark, being scared to death. And it finally hit me, like, I'm 16. Like, I don't know anything about anything. Like, I'm scared of the dark. You know what I mean? Like, I can't do this. You know, I can't do whatever it is that I'm doing. I don't know how to handle life. I'm doing a bad job of it. And it's either, it was really, it became that moment of, like, you know, they talk about in the book where we can't live with or without drugs. And I realized that using wasn't the answer, but I needed to do something. Because just not using wasn't the answer either. And I started going, like, paying attention. They had always taken us to meetings. Now I started paying attention at them. And I got my first sponsor who was so mean, and I loved her. Actually, I hate her too, just like the halfway house. I probably hate her just as much as the halfway house, but I love her for that, because she was blunt and she was honest and she didn't put up with anything that came out of my mouth. She told me to shut up. She told me to listen. She told me I didn't know anything. She told me I was a spoiled brat. She told me I was ungrateful. She told me, she said, it doesn't matter if you get clean now or if you don't. She's like, but if you use, you're going to die, and then that's what you're going to have to live with. And that's what I needed. You know, I didn't need any sugarcoating. I didn't need any, you know, gray areas. I don't do well with gray areas. I stretch them to the limit, hence why I was 10 minutes late today. You know, I look at my GPS. If it says an hour and 30 minutes, I know in my head from driving to work in Ohio all the time that really I can get there in an hour and, like, 15 minutes if my GPS says an hour and 30 minutes. So, like, I'll wait 15 more minutes before I start driving. And that's what I do with gray areas. I push everything to the limit. Like, how far can I go before shit just falls apart? And she didn't let me do that. And I started working steps, you know, not because I wanted to, because I was back in that corner with 6 months clean. I hated myself, like that self-obsession. Like, I couldn't stand walking into meetings. Like, I would, like, walk into a meeting and I would hurry up and run to the back. Like, I hated sharing. I always felt like people were looking at me, like, no matter what. And I'll never forget, like, I always share this because I heard somebody say it once and it described exactly how I felt. They said, you know, like, if they were sitting in a meeting and somebody was sitting in front of them, like, they felt like they were looking at them. And that's how I felt. Like, even if you're sitting in front of me, I know you want to be looking at me. Like, if you could, you would turn around to be looking at me. Like, that's how self-obsessed I was. Like, I just felt like people were just constantly on me. And so when I started working the steps, you know, things honestly just got better. You know, and I think they got better for a number of reasons. But I know for a lot of it, I put a lot of stock in the people I surround myself with here. A lot of it. And where I got clean in the other fellowship. If I go to NA Hell for saying that, I don't know, it's my story. So I got clean in AA, and it was all older men, except for, like, the two women. There was, like, two women in there that sponsored all the other women and at the halfway house. And, you know, I'll never forget the feeling of finally having somebody believe in me when I didn't believe in myself. You know, like, these guys, like, really put on to me, like, that I could do this. You know, that it didn't matter that I was 16. It didn't matter that I shot dope. It didn't matter anything. All that mattered was I didn't want to live the way that I was living anymore, and I didn't have to. You know, and they were there, you know. I mean, they, you know, for the year and a half that I was at that halfway house, like, they were the greatest, solid group of people I've ever encountered in my life. And so that taught, you know, when I came back to Pittsburgh, like, that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted solid, good people in my life, because I become whoever I hang out with. In almost 10 years clean, that might be the only thing I know is, you know, my levels of acceptability totally depend about who I'm hanging out with. And if I'm hanging out with people that are doing some not-so-acceptable shit, I start doing it, and I start thinking it's acceptable. So I came back to Pittsburgh, and life was good. You know, I'm working the steps, and I'm going to meetings, and I have 18 months clean now, so I get a boyfriend. And we get an apartment, and I graduate from high school, and I get a car, and I'm going to college, and you know, life is just so good, you know, and like I said, I'm doing these steps, what I started to learn was that it wasn't that life was so messed up, and it was, like, my life was really messed up, but everybody's life's really messed up. It was, you know, my perception of it, you know, just twisted it into, like, some type of not reality. You know, and the steps helped me rearrange my perception back to something that I can live with, something that I can accept and understand and get through. Because my, like, perception of reality was, like, I couldn't do it, you know? I couldn't do my own reality. It was too painful. It was too hard. One of my biggest fears, you know, of coming into this program, I realized after working some steps, wasn't necessarily living life. It was that I thought I was going to have to live life alone. That I was going to have to do it all on my own. That no matter what came down the pike, you know, no matter what I had to handle, I was going to have to handle it on my own. And that pressure, I was caving under that pressure. You know, and I thought that, you know, when I used, that's what I thought was relief from, like, I can't do this on my own. And then when I got here and I started working the steps and I got a God of my understanding and I had a sponsor and a we, I realized that I don't ever have to do anything on my own. That I'm not on my own in here. And no matter what happens in life, like, I have people that are going to carry me to the other side of it, even when I don't want to get to the other side of it. And so I started working the steps, and I talked about that hatred I had for my parents. And I started to understand the disease of addiction, and I started to understand that it's not that they didn't want me. It's not that they didn't love me. It's that we lose. We always lose to the disease of addiction. We never win. And we will give up anything that stands in our way between us and the next one. And that's what we all do. And my mom, when I had been in the half house, I flew home because my mom had got put on life support. And me, my brother, and my sister were her next of kin. And we were supposed to determine whether or not to pull her off of life support. She had been an alcoholic. She felt she had gotten pneumonia and a couple other things, just not taking care of her body, and fell into a coma. And the doctor said that she was not going to wake up. She wasn't. She was on a ventilator, and he said there's no way she's waking up. And I just couldn't make that decision, you know. And I told my sister, you know, that I loved and respected her, and whatever she wanted to do, I would follow suit. So we waited, and my mom ended up waking up the next morning.
Right.
And so she woke up, and she ended up getting clean for about a year. You know, she didn't go to meetings, but she stopped drinking for about a year. And in that year, I spent a lot of time with her. And, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to her and filling in some gaps about my childhood and really getting to know her and to love her and to forgive her. And around Christmas, I went to see her. And she had been drinking. And the doctor had told her that if you start drinking, like, it's it. Like, it's a wrap. Like, you're, like, she was already dying. That is why I spent so much time with her. She had cirrhosis of the liver. She was already dying. Like, it was, you know what I mean? Like, she only had, they said, up to 3 years maximum if she took complete care of herself. So when I came back at Christmas and I saw that she had been drinking, something I know now that I didn't know then because I hadn't really worked 6 and 7 step thoroughly with 3 years clean was I have a mouth on me. And when you hurt me, oh my God, do I want to character assassinate you. It's like I store it up back here. You know, I'm just waiting for that moment for you to say the wrong thing so I can come back and tell you all about yourself. And that's what I did. You know, my mom, I saw her, she was drinking. I was so hurt. And I didn't realize that I was hurt. I thought I was mad. I thought I was angry. I thought it was justifiable. Really what it was, I was just in so much pain. And not being able to express that in an appropriate manner, I told her how much I hated her. And that she was, you know, the worst mother anybody could ask for. She ended up going to the hospital the next day. She was once again put on a ventilator. She couldn't talk, but she was conscious. And I told the nurse on the phone that I was coming out to see her, and my mom wrote on a notepad that she didn't want me to come out and see her. So I didn't go, and I, you know, she was kind of getting better, and I figured, you know, I will go. She ended up passing away that night. And that's what happened. When we don't get clean, there's no way around it. You know, we lose everything that we love. We push everything that we love away. We build up walls. We tear apart families. We destroy so many other things besides our own lives. You know, we leave people wondering what could have been, what might have been. You know, we just leave this whole other thing because, you know, our God has put so many rules in our lives, you know, where we can be you know, today I can be a friend and I can be a sponsor and I can be a sponsee and I can be an employee and I can be an employer and I can be an aunt and a, you know, a sister. I can be all of these things that God has put into my life. But if I pick up one by one, I lose the ability to be any of those things, any of them. And I'm not just the one that suffers from that. You know, the nephews that I'm supposed to be an aunt to, they suffer from that. My sister, who I'm supposed to be a sister to, she suffers from that. You know, like, me as a daughter, I suffered from what happened with my mom. And that's what this is about, you know, and what I had talked about, you know, I had gotten clean and I was going to meetings and I was working some steps, but I had got all this stuff. You know, I got the boyfriend, the car, the job, I was going to college and I had all this stuff and I thought, like, that's what this was about. Like, I have arrived. And when my mom passed away, I realized that that is not what this is about. That it is not about the shit that we get because we're not giving the dope man our money anymore. You know, it's about the fact that if I don't stay here, I will die from this disease. And that if I don't stay here and come here and participate, there's somebody else out there that's never going to find out that they don't have to die from this disease. And so after my mom passed away, I came back with a whole different perspective on what this program was about, and it took me years. You know, and that's what, you know, talks about in the literature, more will be revealed. Like, I did not believe until I had 4 years clean that this was about life or death. Didn't believe it. I thought it was about bad consequences and you know, I had good consequences clean, bad consequences using. So I'm going to stay clean for a while. And somewhere, you know, from, you know, that they talk about that transmission from the head to the heart. And somewhere in my head, I had heard people say, you know, if you go back out, you're going to die. And I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. And then some, you know, my mom passed away, and all of a sudden it was there. It was in my heart. For me, it's not. I don't care. You know, I've been backed into so many corners clean. Like, I don't care about the consequences. Do you know how much damage I've done clean to just not feel the way I was feeling? Like, the reason I didn't pick up the first one wasn't because of the consequences. The reason I didn't pick up the first one was because I don't want to die today. And that's what's in my heart. You know, because clean, I have gone out and I have destroyed some credit cards. I've destroyed some relationships. I've done a lot of things in that pursuit to fill that void with something that it can't be filled with. And then, you know, so I came back here and when it took on that whole other perspective, you know, it was just better. You know, life was just better because then I wasn't, you know, I wasn't constantly obsessed with trying to be better than or do more than or have more than you. You know, now all of a sudden we're all addicts just trying to do the same thing, and I don't care. I don't care where you work. I don't care what you do. I don't care about anything unless you want to get another day clean, and that was it. And that's a whole other level of freedom that I didn't have until I had 4 years clean. And I ended up doing amazing things. You know, I went to London when I had 5 years clean. I moved to London, which was amazing. It was crazy because it's a city of 3.2 million people. And their biggest NA meeting is smaller than this meeting. Their biggest meeting. You know, and I tell this story all the time, too, because I just think it's, like, it's funny. Like, we all went out to eat afterwards, a whole bunch of people. You know, and I did the same thing there that I did when I came here. I went to a meeting and I said, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, this sounded like a really great idea before I flew 3,000 miles. Now I'm here. I don't know anybody. I have no idea what's going on. And they gripped me up and, you know, we went out to eat after the meeting, you know. And when we were out to eat after a meeting, people were just talking. We were talking about clean time. And at the time, I had 5 years clean. And she was like, oh, my God, you have the most time here. And I thought, oh, my God, it's over for all of us. Like, we're done. It's a wrap. Like, oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. Like, the ship is sinking fast, like, we're all done for. And, you know, and then I got that renewed, like, you know, where I got clean in Pittsburgh, like, you know, to just, you know, like, for me, I'm not saying that clean time means a lot, but time takes time, you know, and there's something to be said for people that can stick and stay here and not pick up no matter what. And to have that experience, strength, and hope at my fingertips, to know that there's a city full of 3.2 million people that are struggling to get clean time in their fellowship. And that, you know, that brought me back because over there, like, they don't lose sight of the newcomer. you know, like, you know, down in Pittsburgh, like, there's so many people coming in and out all the time, you don't know who's who. And up there, like, I'll never forget, we got in the car, and, like, we're driving all over the place looking for this kid, Johnny. I didn't even know who Johnny was. And they're, like, driving all over London. They're like, well, he was at the meeting last night, but he didn't show up tonight. We need to find out where he is and what he's doing. And I was like, are you serious right now? Like, what is going on? And that's how they, that's what they do up there. You know, their members matter to them. They can't lose a member. They need them. And, you know, and I came back from Pittsburgh, and, you know, life's been good to me. You know, I've done a lot of things here. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've gotten into some really bad situations. You know, I just don't pick up. And I share honestly, and I don't care. I don't care if people judge me for it. I don't care if people knock me for it. You know, it's so much easier to come in here and share about where I'm at than to share about where you think I should be at. You know, and I don't hurt people today. You know, I'm, like I said, you know, I play those roles in my life. I show up today. I'm a good friend. I'm a good sister. I'm a good aunt. I'm a good sponsor. I'm a good sponsee. I'm a good employee. You know, I show up and I'm accountable and I can be there for people today. I give, you know, this fellowship, whatever it is that I got. You know, I go to meetings, I work the steps, I ask for help, I always ask for help. I don't try to do this alone anymore, I don't have to, and I'm not going to. You know, it's, you know, just last year, you know, I'd been in this really, you know, really bad relationship for a long time, and it talks about, you know, basic text relationships can be a very painful area for us. Yes, they can. Like, I will attest to that statement. And, you know, like, with my mom dying, when that relationship went so bad, like, you know what, I remember, like, at my mom's funeral, there was an entire table of addicts that had never met my mother, never met her. You know, there was, like, five or six people that had never met me before. They came along with my sponsor. And, you know, when I was going through, you know, this breakup, I was a total disaster, and I moved into somebody's house. I left my apartment and moved into their spare bedroom. And that's what this is about in here. You know, the people in here have carried me, you know, and I never, you know, I never experienced that before. And I didn't realize when I got here, 10 years ago, I didn't realize that that's what I was looking for. I just needed help. You know, I needed help to not do what I was doing. And I found that in here. And, you know, and like I said, I didn't ever intend on staying here. It was never my intentions. I didn't think last summer, I didn't think I was going to make it to this summer. You know? Not at all. There were moments that I cried myself to sleep all night long, and I thought, if I don't kill myself by next summer, it's going to be a miracle. And the people in this fellowship wouldn't let me go. They wouldn't let me go. And that's what I try to be today. You know, it's just like people have been to me. I don't let them go. You know, if my phone rings, I answer it. And I don't knock people for where they're at, because I could have told you when I had 6 years clean, I know I said, I looked at the exact person I was going to be with. I didn't know I was going to be with him at the time, but I looked at who he was with. They were this, like, crazy relationship. And I said, I swear to God, people have seen, like, they were there, they witnessed it. I said, I will never be like them. A year later, I was dating him, and we were just like them. So I know today to not ever knock where people are at, because I might just be there. I have no idea what the future has in store for me, and I don't know who's going to help me and who's going to save me. But I'm not afraid to ask for help today. And I just try to do my best on a daily basis, and I keep coming back. That's all I got.